Welcome to the sixth preseason Supercoach Coach podcast of season 2017. My name's Marcus, and I'm joined this week by FB Donkey.
G'day, mate. How's it going?
Yeah, good. I actually should say that I'm joining you for this show because we're recording this together live before the Essendon Geelong game. So it's good to catch up, and hopefully the Cats get up on here tonight.
If Bombers win, it's important. If Cats win, it's just a preseason game.
So this week we're covering the forwards. The last few shows we've covered the rest of the position. So if you want to go back and have a listen to the Ruck show, the midfield show, and the defenders show, you can go back and listen to those. Also, should note that we've dropped a Patreon exclusive preseason show yesterday, and that's available special for our Patreon. So if you're wanting to consider supporting us to get access to that show, you can do that. And Patreons, just look for your email inbox and you should find a link in there. As always, thank you for your questions from social media. We only have one more show prior to the lockout. So next week, we're going to cover the rookies and do a bit of a recap show. So if you have any hangover questions or you want to follow up on a particular position or a player, don't forget to shoot them across to us. We're doing one last show before the final lockout. So, Mark, without further ado, let's just jump straight into it. We'll start off with the two locks. Both play for the Bulldogs in our first show where we talked about first picked and exciting players. They both featured heavily. So Dalhouse, 521K, McRae, 512K. They've had pretty good preseason so far. Haven't really done anything to push themselves out of selection. Where do you sit on them?
I think, Dalhouse got 140, 150 in the first JLT game. Until last year, actually had pretty good durability. Averaged 103 in 2015. And he's severely underpriced from last year because he had that 24 the week after I brought him into my team last year. So, look, I think that at 520,000, he is definitely a lock. He's potential to average 1.5 to 1.10, and depending on how many midfield minutes he gets. So 100% on him. And you think McRae's in the same category or a little bit below that?
I think I had McRae over Dalhouse when we first talked about the XVY, but it feels like a toss of the coin. McRae's averaged 100 twice already. There's no reason he can't keep improving. And I think just in terms of total disposals, McRae's more likely to hit big numbers and therefore punish you more than potentially Dalhouse. We know Dalhouse can get to potentially a 110 average, which would still sting if you didn't have him. But McRae, I guess, he has a potential to be an elite midfielder in the future.
Yeah, well, he averaged 100 in his second season. There's not many players to have done that. So I know that the depth at the Bulldogs midfield is probably the thing that might keep him out a little bit or keep his scores down a little bit. But, I mean, he had 140 in a prelim last year. Way too good to leave out. And he's a midfielder available as a forward. Young, in his fifth season, could even improve on last year. So, yep, Garrett, I would absolutely lock those two in no matter what, personally.
So I like that makes the selections in the forward line a little bit easier because I think the drop-off after those two players is fairly steep. As we've talked about a little bit already this preseason, a lot of those midfielders available in the forward line are no longer classified there. And with key position forwards suffering the last couple of seasons, their average seems to have dropped down as well. Buddy's no longer, averaging 109.
Yeah.
But I guess with this drop-off in point scoring across the board, does that bring those key position forwards back into focus? All of a sudden, do, Nick Riewoldt, Tommy Lynch, do they look a lot better as options? I know that there's a lot of chatter in the forums at the moment about potentially going back to a key position forward, which is a bit of a changing trend.
I think it's a little bit more than that because there's potential for the key forwards to even score a little bit more this season. The AFL is trying to manipulate the rules in a way that will bring back the key forwards because they're such an exciting element of the game. So, and we have seen big bags of goals from a number of players in the preseason, which might be a sign of things to come in the in the real stuff, or it might not be. I think Riewoldt needs to be considered a little bit differently because he has such an elite premium scoring history in the past. Plus, he's going to be sort of playing as a midfielder more than a key forward this year. The Saints have got a bunch of other options to put in that forward line. So Yeah, I think that Riewoldt considered differently, but yeah, I do think that the key position forwards are more relevant this year.
So James Fairweather's basically asked that question, is it the year to start with a key position forward? His two options that he put up are Roux and Lynch. So 550K for Roux. He actually averaged 101 last year, which is makes him the highest starting averager for season 2017. Tommy Lynch, 507,000 and at one point, especially early on in the season, was absolutely firing on all cylinders. I guess they're sort of at opposite ends of the career spectrum. Yeah. Lynch is on the verge of breaking out and Roux sort of just clinging on there. But the closest comparison I can draw to Nick Riewoldt at the moment is Matthew Richardson before he retired, yeah, when he transitioned to the wing. Just huge tank and you doubt their ability to sort of stay on park, but they get enough marks on the wing and enough kicks and manage to maintain their scoring history.
I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I have looked that up before, and I think Richo averaged about 95 Supercoach that year. Mm-hmm. So
close enough to premium numbers.
Yeah, so I mean, that's a good result, but that's not an awesome result for 570,000 for Riewoldt. So you would really need him to go 100 to 105 if you're going to be paying that much, and he's a good chance of doing it. I think that he's someone that I'll strongly consider in draft. I probably just don't have the room to pay that much for another premium forward at the moment. Maybe there's romance about it, but I'd be probably keen to go Tommy Lynch first. He is, how many seasons is this? This is number 7, so key forward, primed to be in his absolute peak right now. Averaged 93 last year. If Gold Coast improve, he's going to kick more goals, and that will just see his score jump higher. 5 or so automatically. So I can see a big improvement from Lynch this year, and he is definitely sort of in high consideration for my team.
It's fairly obvious between the two that Lynch looks like the much more attractive option. I think it'd be more the people caught up in the romance of Nick Riewoldt that they'd be tempted into him, I would have thought. Lynch, I think, of all the key position forwards, probably looks the most tempting to me. Josh Kennedy, we've got a question about him as well at 532,000. And Buddy is obviously the other option at 515,000. Yeah. Buddy played 22 games last season, which is something that's...
No one would have predicted that.
Yeah, not very common. Could he play 22 again this year? Because you would have thought...
Seems unlikely.
But, I mean, if he manages even just to replicate this season, 95 and 22 as a sort of basement would be not too bad.
Yeah, but, I mean, you can always pick up Buddy a little bit cheaper during the season, I guess. And when maybe when the Swans have a good draw coming up, might be worthwhile picking him up. I just don't see Buddy going at that 110 again. Like, I think that's in the past. I don't think that you're going to see him kick 100 goals and average 110, especially in that Swans lineup that has... so many other good scorers in there. Like, it's going to be really hard to get an over 100 average. Mm-hmm. Josh Kennedy has played 22 the last 2 years. Actually, only missed 3 games in the last 4 years. And that's similar stats to Tommy Lynch. Never averaged over 100. Got pretty close a couple of times. But 97 average last year. You'd see him being a good chance of replicating that. And I guess he's got Sammy Mitchell delivering him the ball now. Mm. West Coast might have a bit of a better year. You could see him kicking 70 goals pretty easily this year. So, look, I think he's a pretty decent pick. It's a lot to pay for a key forward. And I guess all of these 4 guys, Riewoldt, Franklin, Kennedy and Lynch, they could all average very, very close to one another, play similar amount of games, and they all have huge game potential. So, look, sort of pick your favourite out of those guys, I guess. And that's why I have probably Lynch ahead of the others and probably Riewoldt second, just because he's... possession count is likely to go up a little bit this year, and St Kilda might be a bit on the improve. So,
I think I'd have Lynch first, but I actually have Riewoldt probably fourth. I think I'd have.
Is that because of price or durability, age?
Durability, yeah. I think that's probably why I'd have Buddy at third, and then Kennedy at second. All right, we'll move on to another key position player, but. This one might spend a bit more time outside of the forward line, maybe a bit of time in the midfield. Joshua Gibbs has asked about Jared Ruffhead at 367,000. Is he worth a pick at his price? We've seen him average 105 pretty comfortably in seasons past. Do you think he can get back to, you know, that sort of mark? He's certainly been in top 6 conversations for multiple seasons before, so it does present some pretty good value.
He's a tricky one. So it's been 4 seasons since he averaged over 100, but he did do that twice, and he's averaged in the 90s 3 years in a row. I guess with, like, the Essendon boys, how is a year out going to affect him? The last 4 years, he's missed a couple of games in three of them. So that's going to affect his overall average in your team. And if he averages 90 and plays 20 games, then that's, even at his cheap price, that's a fail price. That's a fail pick. And that's what he did at his last season, I think. I think you need at least 5 more points with his average and not missing those games. So, look, I think he is close to being in my team. I really liked what I saw. I was watching him today against Port Adelaide and plenty of the ball up the ground. New captain. There's plenty to like about him, and if he can get to 95 as an average, then I think that's a really, really good pick considering the lack of depth in the forward line and his price in the under 370,000. So, look, he's close to my team but hasn't been in it a lot. I just worry about whether 90 is more likely to be his average and whether he might miss a couple of games. So, yeah, but I can't, if the rookies don't come up, he's sort of next in line.
I think I agree that basically, I'd only really pick Ruffhead if I felt stuck for options. I think that price point is not traditionally the price point I like to select from. And the number of sort of asterisks that you can put against his name, you know, those different varying levels of risk sort of build to make the upside not quite attractive. I think if you were thinking that he could potentially hit 100 mark, then you'd be a lot more attracted with that price and risk profile. But, you know, if you're talking about him maybe getting to 95, 90 being likely, then I'd be trying to avoid him even if structurally he sort of fits. Those sorts of players can be traps, so I'm quite tentative on him. We'll move on to breakout selections now. I want to start off with a player that performed really well this weekend, and we didn't get questions about him, but I picked him last year, and I kind of thought I wouldn't pick him this year because he was All-Australian and he only averaged 90.5 in the Supercoach land. Toby Green, do you see him potentially stepping out and, you know, moving to a 95 or 100 average if GWS make the top four and he spends even 5%, 10% more time in the midfield? That might be enough. He's certainly, I think he's averaged 100 before, so has the capabilities to do it.
I think he averaged, when he came back from his club in post-suspension, he came back and averaged like 120 over 6 or 7 weeks. So if he was going to get extra midfield time, then yeah, I'd absolutely lock him in. If he was playing for a different club, I would 100% lock him in because I think he could average 110 in the midfield. But given the fact that he kicked, what, he kicked about 5 goals this weekend, it's likely that he's just going to keep playing most of his football up forward and be easy to score. Assists is really good. I guess if GWS really do push ahead and finish top of the ladder, even there, that might be an extra 5 points in his average for him. So pretty durable. I don't think he's a terrible pick at all. I think he will average more than the 90 that he did last year. But a bit like what you would have seen last year, Marcus, he's can be really up and down. And I guess a lot of forwards are, but he'll pull out the 150s, but he can also pull some sort of 60s, 70s as well.
Yeah, he struggles to score 80, 90 in a quiet game. So he doesn't push up the ground enough to be able to get consistent disposals to sort of increase his basement. And, you know, that's why he also has that massive amount of upside. He plays close enough to goals that he is a very dangerous target. And when he is hot and on form, he can kick 5 or 6 goals. So yeah, I think the main factor for me with Green is Delidio ending up at GWS, understanding that he might miss round one in that. But to me, he's the biggest threat, yeah, to Green, because they're both dangerous forwards that can spend a bit of time in the midfield. They're really good hit-up forwards for their height. I think they can play fairly sort of similar roles in either pocket. And if he even gets, you know, 25% less opportunity, his average will dip even further as a, you know, medium forward. So that's definitely a risk there. Next question we have here is from Simon Grigg. He's asking about a comparison between Caddy, Billings and Steele. And Mark, you've chucked Petrarca in there as well. Apparently 19% ownership at the moment. So quite hot for a bloke that hasn't played a lot of games so far, but 489,000 for Caddy, 408,000 for Billings, 396 for Petrarca, 347 for Steele. To be honest, this really does feel like a pool of players that present a lot of upside but potentially aren't necessarily ready to definitively break out yet. Even though the year Steele side bottom and Dangerfield broke out gets referenced a lot, people can forget that Sidebottom and Dangerfield both burnt plenty of coaches for about two or three seasons straight when they failed to actually break out. So these blokes all have the potential to, but in my mind, also carry a lot of risk that they'll stay at that price. And that's a lot of money to have locked up in a player that's not quite premium scoring. Caddy is the one that we've talked about most so far this preseason. He had a pretty average showing yesterday. Only 15 touches, didn't really seem to be able to influence the ball in the middle too much, and his impact up forward was also a bit limited. I've cooled my jets quite seriously on him. How about yourself, Mark?
Yeah, I guess Caddy was in my very, very first team picked just because he was a midfielder available as a forward. But 489,000, I think I'd rather punt on one of those key position players that we talked about earlier. So that's where he sort of gets ruled out a little bit for me. I'm not sure that he has a ceiling above 95, whereas the Sidebottom Dangerfield picks that you referenced, they at least their ceiling was sort of the 1.5 or 1.20 even for Dangerfield. Like, the upside was much, much higher than I predict that Caddy has, especially with Richmond's midfield. Like, he's competing with a reasonably deep midfield that are going to share the points. It's not just like he's walking in and going to become their top two midfielder this year. So that's where I probably, if I was going to pick out of the four, I'd be looking at a little bit of value. And thinking about the four, like, how often are you going to pick the right one? You're probably a 25% chance of picking the right one this year, the one that's going to be the one that plays 22 and averages 100 for the season. So that's not very good odds of getting it right. I think that Petrarca was probably in a lot of teams before this week, where he scored about a 30 in JLT3 after he averaged about 110 over the first two. Look, he was injured his knee in the first season, so he's sort of a little bit older than a second-year player, but we have seen the absolute cream of the crop second-year players can average about 100. Normally, they need a fair bit of mid-time to do that. Petrarca might be stuck in the forward line a little bit more than that. I think he's going to have some really big games this year, and he could go on a run where he's going to be quite a good pick, but I probably have my doubts that he could do that over the course of the year. Billings has averaged 88 in his second season, coming into his fourth. He probably interests me a bit more, especially with St Kilda improving. I think he can go to 95, but on the weekend, like, he had 30 touches and didn't attend one centre bounce. So I think that, like, he might be getting time up the ground, but he's not getting genuine midfield minutes. So it's going to be pretty hard to average 100.
Yeah.
He's going to have to still kick a number of goals to do that. So, and Steele, he's a second-year player, 347, probably not cheap enough. If it was 247, he'd be in a lot of teams, I think. But at 347, I don't think he's going to become top three midfielder at the Saints. So, yeah, I think that that's too much risk. So, out of the four, I guess I'm taking Billings, but I'm trying to avoid picking all four of them, I guess.
Agree with you. I think I have Steele probably ahead of all of them just because of his price point. I'd be most inclined to pick any of these players if you're confident that their team's breaking out into the top eight. If you saw St Kilda as a likely top eight contender or likely to end up in the top eight, then you're more happy with picking a player like Steele and Billings, and hoping a rising tide will help with the uplift in average and not just relying on them improving so much as a player that they can command a premium scoring even in a team that's losing more games than they're winning.
Yeah, I don't want to talk too many people out of picking these guys. Like, if you want to back one of these guys in and you think that they are the improver and their team's going to improve, and they're the sort of player that you can take a risk on, because the downside for them is probably not huge. They're probably going to average around that 85 to 95 mark.
Yeah, I'd say if you are quite confident that one of these blokes are likely to break out and you want to take a punt because structurally it fits, you got about 400K for an F3, then by picking Billings, even if he doesn't work out, you've still got that pre-round three trade period where a lot of the time we spend the trade on sort of mid-price side swaps on blokes that potentially don't work out to blokes that look like they've clearly established themselves in the home and away season. So if Billings doesn't work out, you could trade him for Ruffies, Petrarca, or Steele. I agree with you to that extent, Mark, that the risk is somewhat mitigated if there's a few options that you're happy to consider prior to round three. The next question we have here is from James DeSellis. He's asking about Toop Miller at 429K. I think he was a little bit more in focus at the start. Gold Coast midfield are getting a lot of players back, and I've got some serious question marks on his ability to maintain a high level of scoring when the team aren't as reliant on him. And that concept of sort of reliance is something that we've talked about a little bit with Jack in the Patreon exclusive shows, but I think is a fair concept. You like to pick players that your team relies on because they just get more opportunities. And Tuukka Miller, I think, will see less opportunities this year.
He goes from a top two mid at the end of last year to a fifth mid or so just because of the returning players, and that is going to squeeze out some of his midfield minutes. I'm sure he'll have a decent season and average okay, and he's got leadership potential. There's lots to like about him, but I don't think that he's worthwhile picking as someone that's going to break out into premium category, I guess, unless the injury curse hits Gold Coast again, which, given what's happened the last couple of years, it could happen.
Mm-hmm.
I think he fits in a very similar category to the other four guys.
Mm-hmm. All right, last question, and same price point, so I wouldn't be surprised if he gets a similar evaluation. But Sean Higgins at 426,000 for North Melbourne. There's talk that he'll spend a bit more time in the midfield now. He has averaged 95-plus comfortably before. Injury and durability concerns are probably the biggest issue with Higgins across his career. And last year, only played the 8 games. Yeah, I don't know. It feels like going back to the well one too many times on this one. I've been a big fan of Higgins in the past, and you know that, Mark, but even I'm a little bit hesitant about going back there.
I think I've picked him 3 times, so advocated picking him 3 times, and he sucked all 3.
Oh, that's a bit harsh.
I was really, really against picking him a couple of times, and one of them he averaged 95 and burnt me.
Yeah.
So maybe my opinion is not worthwhile on Sean Higgins. But look, I think he could... I actually genuinely think he could do all right because North just don't have a lot of stars at the moment. And so he's looked pretty good over the preseason. But that durability history is a massive concern.
Mm. The last section that we're going to go to, ruck forwards. And there's a couple of blokes to talk through. One is Ryder, but yeah, he's sort of sinking in calculations the more the preseason plays out. The other bloke, though, that has his stocks on the rise in contrast is Nan Curvis. So got a question about him from at Fabregasto on Twitter. Has Nan Curvis now firmed as a viable F4 and ruck cover? It's interesting with the ruck situation that we have in 2017 and potentially sort of two clear ruck options, that Nan Curvis might be potentially better suited to start as an F4 rather than an R2 because there's less certainty over the top 6 forwards than there are over the top 2 rucks.
Mm-hmm.
Thoughts about starting Nan Curvis up forward?
I think what he's gone 89, 89 and 130 or so in the JLT games. And you mentioned some stats earlier in the preseason where he was sort of just getting between 70 and 80 almost every game when he was second ruck for Sydney. Mm-hmm. So that's a big difference. I think Hampson out as an LTI. The fact that Marek just doesn't look like he's going to get a game. They're all really, really good signs for him. And he's going to be given the chance at Richmond. So if he can ruck solo for 8 weeks and not get injured, then I think he'll average at least 90, which is a pretty okay result at his price. And then you can sort of work out what you're going to do with him after that. And if he's sort of averaging 95 and the forward averages aren't very high this year, then you can just keep hold on to him. Or if he's not doing quite as what you expected, you just upgrade him later. And he also, probably the main reason picking him is he provides a little bit of insurance on Sanderlands.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I was a bit skeptical at first because of, I think when last time we spoke about him, there was a fair bit of doubt over his role at Richmond. But I think that we've seen some new facts since then. And so that's been enough to probably change my mind there. And he's been in my forward line for a few weeks.
Mm. I think the thing that's impressed me the most about his preseason is that he's a better genuine tap ruckman than I originally gave him credit for. I thought that his strength was a little bit more in the fact that he's mobile, he can move around the ground and kick goals. But I actually have rated his tap outs, and I think the last game he played, he won the hitouts 9-1. So 9 hitouts to advantage to 1, which is, that's worth 45 Supercoach points right there. That's a big game. So yeah, he certainly moved up in my consideration. I'd still call out that it feels a bit like a trap. I mean, the fact that you're talking about him potentially being a good pick if the forwards don't come along, but, you know, we tend to find that somebody bobs their head up in the forward line over the course of a season, and we're still likely to get six blokes that will probably average 100 over the course of 2017. I think his real value for me stems in the fact that he's a ruck forward player. And if all the other ruck forwards are crap backup options, then my focus on Nankervis sharpens just off that reason.
Yeah, I think that the fact that there's a lack of rookies available also makes him a little bit of a better pick, just because you need to find that extra bit of value to cover the spots in your team. But we'll talk about the rookies a bit more on the next show. And there has been some that have fallen off the radar and some put their head up. So it'll be interesting to look into them a bit more.
Mm. So just before we sign off for this forward show, let's talk about structure, Mark. So we had about three or four questions about that. I'll start with this one from Andrew Bailey. Is it just me or are the forward line premiums lacking in depth this year? He's looking at loading premiums in the defense and the midfield and crossing his fingers for the forward line. Thoughts on a premium rookie strategy everywhere except the forward line where mid prices may be the go. Mm-hmm. And we've referenced this, I think, already across the preseason, talking about loading up in the midfield this year. I think most of us were talking about five or six premium mids, which is a lot of money locked up there. So I can definitely relate to that feeling, and wanting to roll the dice on a few more mid prices in the forward line.
Yeah, that's because you love doing that, mate.
Where do you sit then, Mark? How many mid prices do you have?
Jeez, I'd have to look. It depends on the day, mate. Or actually, it depends which quarter of which game we're watching. I've got two premiums locked in my forward line and then looking at maybe another premium and a mid-pricer. So there's not a heap of mid-prices that really tempt me. I think Nankervis and Ruffhead are the only real players between 250 and 400 that are interesting me in the forward line. So I don't see myself loading up on mid-prices in the forward line, mate.
Structure-wise, Matthew Donnelly's asking whether you're sitting on two, three, or four starting keepers at the moment.
Two guaranteed, probably at least three premiums in the forward line, with one of them being Nankervis. And then it's whether I play that extra rookie or have the fourth premium in the forward line. That's sort of my floating position, which can switch with the midfield or defense. Like, there's so many unknowns still with 2 weeks to go. In regards to the rucks, in regards to rookies, that you've got to still be a little bit flexible. I certainly haven't locked down a structure yet. What about you?
Yeah, I think it's interesting that you say that, because I think we reached consensus across most of the positions so far this preseason. And that would have had me thinking that, you know, three of the four positions are relatively solved, then your fourth piece of the jigsaw puzzle sort of just falls into place. But I agree with you. I'm struggling with that final makeup. You tend to get to a couple of positions on ground at the end of the preseason that you tend to toggle between, and I'm finding that third and fourth forward often being the player that switches up and down depending on how I feel day to day. So, yeah, overall, I'd agree with that. I think that I am not advocating a crazy mid-price strategy of picking two or three of Petrarca, Steele, Billings, Caddy as a way of dealing with a lack of absolute top-line players. But, you know, maybe you might pick a Billings instead of not picking him at all, because structurally you just have that coin to spare and you might as well take a punt on someone than a 200K rookie that's only going to average 50, which is what potentially you could be looking at as an option B.
Yeah, there are a few of those Taranto, Hoskin, Elliott types that may or may not come up. And I know a lot of people have them in their forward lines. So it'd be interesting to see what solutions people come up with. I think that three premium mid-pricer rookies is probably the safest sort of way to go.
Anything else to add before we wrap it up, Mark, in the forward line?
I just think that Paddy Ryder scored 109 today, first game without Lobie there. You saw it at the Bombers that he completely changes when he's solo ruck. Like, it's just a completely different person to when he's the second ruck. So probably just came back into consideration. But, yeah, I'm not sure whether I'd end up putting two of those ruck forwards in my forward line with Nankervis as well.
Yeah, I really don't know if that's a good or bad thing. We also saw it with Steph Martin. He played by himself this weekend and had an absolute massive one as well, 19 touches and 39 hit out. So I think on the one hand, it's really good. On the other hand, you're so at risk of just an R2 coming in at even late in the season and sort of disrupting you 18 rounds in, and you thought you had yourself a 110 averager, and by the end of the season, that drops down to 100. So I tend to be more nervous about those players more than anything. Anyway, I'm sure we'll pick that back up next week when we get back to a recap and see where we've landed with the rocks. I think that's still a fairly dynamic position at the moment.
Especially with sort of Spencer doing well and Prius doing well and some talk that those guys might play a second ruck where they haven't before, and that would influence Gorn and Goldstein's scores. So that, yeah, that has thrown a bit of a spanner in the works. But then you got to think back a few years ago, everyone thought Curry was going to play and that would knock Goldstein out of the way. And it just never ended up eventuating. Like if they're a gun solo ruck and they thrive on it like Ryder does, then teams probably will end up leaning towards playing them as that gun solo ruck.
Yeah. Just before we log off, don't forget, if you want to join our ranked leagues, the invites have started going out. They'll go out pretty thick and fast because we're only 11 days out from lockout now. So jump on there to supercoachcoach.com.au if you want to sign up for those. We've got open league codes there as well. Don't forget the Supercoach Coach group. We'll be doing shout outs across the season, and we're trying to organize a bit of merch this season. So we'll likely include a cap or something as a little prize for the winner of the Supercoach group. So you might as well jump on if you haven't already. I think that's probably it, Mark. One show left.
Thank God, man. It's starting to do my head in this. It's getting pretty confusing, and happy just to lock my team away.
Yeah. I think this has probably been the most challenging season over the last few years, in the sense that normally at this stage, you're trying to, as much as you can, lock down your players and sort of decide on your last two or three spots. But with big cash to spend at the top end, there's a lot of tossing up over that those ultra premiums, and then still very dynamic situation in the ruck and forward line as well this year makes things very interesting.
I think because of the rookies and the doubts around them, that I don't remember having so many questions still 2 weeks out from the season before, but I guess that's what makes it interesting.
Certainly does. So hopefully this has helped you somewhat. Hopefully we will sort the wheat from the chaff this year to an extent that we get back to 7 of the top 10 leagues. So we like a challenge, and hopefully we get some good results. So thanks for joining us again. Don't forget patreon.com/supercoachcoach if you want to download a bonus show. And I'm actually going to leave you with a little snippet of that right now. So we'll catch you all for the last preseason show next week. See ya.
See ya.
Final section, a post JLT review. Just sort of quick hits or your major takeaways so far from the JLT.
I haven't really found the footy that interesting so far in the preseason, these first two rounds. I'm really looking forward to this week and learning a bit more because of the all those reasons we mentioned at the top of the show. There is some players I want to put past Jack, though, once we're been through this.
Yeah, I'm similar to Mark, and I've been struggling to stay interested in the JLT. I even have an Essendon game that I recorded and didn't finish watching. So
your own team, blasphemous.
Says it all. So not too many takeaways for me.
About yourself, Jack?
Yeah, I've sort of been a bit of the same boat here, which is unfortunate. I'd say I think the biggest takeaway so far is the biggest player. Sandilands in. At the moment, I really like the look of Nankivis as well as that F3 or F4 coverage for when Sandilands inevitably goes down or something like that. Probably at this stage, I've just been watching the structure of teams and maybe some slight role changes, which might give me an indication of who to pick and who to steer clear of. But yeah, like you said, it's difficult to judge based on the current teams that we're seeing and the current players that we're seeing. One thing I do like to keep an eye on, though, is time on ground percentage. I think in particular for guys who are fringe 22, I look at a guy like Tom Stewart for Geelong, and he's playing 85-90% plus time on ground in both of his two games. So if he plays another game with that sort of time on ground percentage, I think that says to me that he's obviously in their plans, and I'm using that's a big measure, I think, for me about how locked into a side players are. When if you're a fringe player, the fact is you're not getting on the field as much as guys who are important. So especially in those key defender roles, if guys like Stewart and guys like Vickers Willis and Mitch Hibbert and those sort of guys can clock up decent time on ground this week, I'll be really pleased, to be honest.
Don't want this get crazy. Don't want this get crazy. Don't want this get crazy.